So let's move now to John in the corduroy jacket, who's going to read us a poem which I know really struck him and a lot of people in this issue. Max Cavitch from America is unable to join us. I haven't actually invited him, so if you're listening, Max, I hope you're with us in spirit, but Pennine Platform funds wouldn't quite run to flying you over. John.
New horse. They tell you, if you ride a dead man's horse, there'll always be a ghost's tug at the reins, and maybe that will keep you from your path. What they don't say is the dead man's former destination, the one his spirit just can't quit, maybe the better option, that you could finish well by slackening your grip. He's a pretty enough paint to ride anywhere, not so small to cost you a new saddle, but refined as though he'd stepped out of a Bonheur or a Stubbs. He smells of apples and sweetgrass, and his outsized caramel eyes have hints of humour in them, not darkened by loss. They tell you, treat him well, it's what he's used to, and I will, no matter where I go, though he's not about to like the road I'm on, so I expect to feel his haunts pull as I go along. To reach an accommodation with these two contrary beings will cost me more than I came ready to pay, but as I catch him watching lassoes of dust dance on the horizon, I think some resistance will be welcome, and that if I end up going someone else's way, I'll still have gotten there by asking no less of myself.
You drew wonderful parallels with the Robert Frost poem, Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening, I think. Was that the one? Or was it... tell us more about what you saw in this poem.
Well, as someone who's never been on a horse, I felt as if I knew what it's like to ride one. And I think that... what is coming across is not just in writing poetry, but in other things, the traditions, the history, the input of previous generations shapes the way we make our own creations, so that there's very few things can say are absolutely new. We're all using other people's gifts and experiences. And I just love the different tones through this. I really love the bit where he smells of apples and sweet grass, and his outsized caramel eyes have hints of humour in them. What a sweet horse, you think. But then at the end we've got, I catch him watching lassoes of dust dance on the horizon. And that, to me, it is the essence of every Western we've ever seen, that there's excitement, there's mystery, there's adventure out there beyond what we can see.
Yes. In fact, what you saw the parallels with was The Path Not Taken, wasn't it?
Yes, I think so.
Yes. We're both a bit hazy now, but I remember you sent me a wonderful exegesis of this poem, and I thought, gosh, yes, and I was hoping that you would deliver it here, but it's hard under pressure to remember exactly, but you've already given us lots of insights into it. Yeah, so thank you, Max, for that tremendous poem, and indeed for three other poems in the issue which very much caught people's attention. Max Cavitch from Philadelphia. We have a time for a little to hear from Linda Ronstadt, I think, unless there's anything else you'd like to say about that or your own poem, John.
No, I think the horse is referred to as a paint, and so I went away and researched what was meant by a paint in this kind of dappled sort of horse. But I remembered the song, I Ride an Old Paint, from way back. Can't remember who it was who sang it. But when I found out Linda Ronstadt had recorded it, I thought that is the one that we must have.
Take it away, Linda.
Thank you. I'm going to Montana to throw the hen. They feed in the cooies, they water in the draw. Their tails are all matted, their backs are all raw.
Something to add about Max Cavitch's poem?
No, we were just saying that the when you're trying to write, when an idea comes to you, I anyway find it really helpful to have that framework around which you can kind of riff on, and you know, you can develop your ideas. I would have loved to have alighted on the idea or the notion, which is a true notion, I think, that Max has got here, that the dead man's horse still retains something of the dead man and the personality of the previous rider, and the fact that he's been able to take that to the lengths that he has. I just like that. I kind of wish that's what I wait for when I'm writing, to have that that kind of framework. But
And the fact it's been handed on to him with reverence, treat him well, they say, that's what he's used to. So it's each idea that comes, each gift of the spirit that comes, is something to be treated reverently and carefully until we discover where it's going.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. And it's kind of fighting the will of your predecessors. So it's yes. You know, I think it's... you know, a gift that was given to Max, this framework of that idea that he's worked around, yeah.
There was another poem you would like to read that you chose, Peter, from this issue. Would you like to... It was Rosie Jackson's Wetherspoons. Rosie Jackson is a much published and very impressive poet. We've been honoured to... publish recently.
Wetherspoons by Rosie Jackson. I'm half expecting him to cancel again, but he's arrived before me, well into his first pint. I keep the conversation light, crowded trains, his holiday in Rhodes. Skim over my own news, as if I don't have much of a life without him, even now. not wanting to lose this eye contact I haven't known for years. But the earth feels remarkably steady, holds us more easily. His rage, my grief, the whole story set down in a wicker cradle corked with mercy. No sign now of a child in bulrushes, handed over too soon. Only this large man in front of me, balding, cheerful, working 7 days a week, tiling walls, climbing up and down ladders, agreeing to a selfie. I no longer dredge up the past, just hint that with a better hand of cards, another life, we might do things differently. And though he has none of my faith in other incarnations, he doesn't scoff as he used to, simply shrugs. Maybe, Mum, maybe. Then stays later than planned, till we have to dash for his train, racing through Saturday night streets, like the teenager I was when all this began. And I think how strange it is, how wondrous, that the heaviness between us has so changed shape. How it used to be a great granite god we both got smashed against again and again, but now has weathered down. No arms, no legs, no face of reproach, just this ghost of a torso with no power to threaten or subdue.
That's a very powerful poem of reconciliation. It looks perhaps at first like a romantic date, and then we find out that it is a mother meeting up with her son. That's how I understand it. Is that... Tell us how it speaks to you.
It's ordinary and heartbreaking. And I'd like you say, it starts you off on kind of the wrong track initially, that you think it's a casual date. Weatherspoons is such a ubiquitous, you know, it's a kind of anonymous meeting place. The fact that it reveals so much so quickly. I think we're probably all watchers of people, and possibly these might be a couple. We might be working out what the relationship might be. What you don't know is what's gone on before. And I think that's what moves me about this particular poem. And you learn about a whole life, you know, within a very short space. It was quite moving for me to read the poem, actually. It was quite... not that I'm suggesting I did it any justice, but I think just the difficulties we have with relationships and all that lies beneath the stillness of the surface, and what's said and what isn't said. And I think a lot of that comes out of this.
I think that's a very strong indicator in a poem of its durability, really, whether it actually has an emotional charge each time you read it. So, and I think it's important to get poems into print so that there is a commitment to the particular text, and that each time that is reinterpreted, it still has that charge. We're going to finish now, I think, with one from Susan reading Juliet Foss's Dowsing.